The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, well, every now and then we get a referral from one of our guests of somebody that say, you know, you really need to have this person on. And one of our favorite folks is Sam Stovall. We've had Sam on several times, chief strategist for S&P. And so when we were with Sam last, I guess we were what, in Vegas?
In Las Vegas at the Money Show.
And he said, you know, there's somebody you really need to have on. And so we started following his work, and he's right. We needed to have him on. So we are pleased today to have with us today Mr. Craig Johnson. Craig is Managing Director and Senior Technical Research Analyst and directs Piper Jaffray's Technical Research Group, and really made news for himself not that long ago by making a very prescient call on the markets, and I understand he's quite bullish. So, good morning, Craig. How are you?
I am wonderful. It's great to be back on the show.
Thank you. And are you as bullish as they say you are? I mean, I was reading an article by Howard Gold about you, and he seems to be singing your praises, and he thinks you're the most bullish person on the planet, I think.
Well, we have been bullish since August of 2012. We're still looking for 2,000 this August on the S&P 500. We laid out that objective in August of 2012. We still think that is going to be just a stepping stone in this secular bull market that we believe still has many years to run. And, you know, as I told Howard, and I'll certainly tell you and all of your listeners, that we got to keep in mind that when we're talking about secular bull markets, these aren't bull markets that last for years. These last for 5 years, 10 years. Think about the bull market that started in 1952. That lasted to the mid-1960s, and you made five times your money. The bull market that started in 82, that lasted until 1999, and you made 15 times your money. And so as I look around at the environment, and I look around at the markets, and I think about sentiment among investors and individual investors, this market is at almost all-time new highs, and nobody likes it. Nobody likes it.
Well, I would agree. In fact, you're absolutely right. The general public doesn't seem to embrace it at all. In fact, there was an article yesterday, and I think the headline of the article was that nobody even so few people actually know that the market has actually done as well as it has. But there are some concerns out there. But I guess I would have to ask you, because I'm interested in your thesis, exactly when did this bull market start? Did this bull market start in your mind after the dot-com bubble at the early part of this century, or did it start in 2009?
So the bull market started in March of 2009 when we hit about 667 on the S&P 500. That was the low. Now, we did not confirm this bull market until we broke above 1550, which was the 2000 and 2007 highs. And when you go back and you look at history, when I talk about 52 and I talk about 82, I'm not starting it from the actual lows like you did in the, you know, 74, 75 bear market, or the actual lows you'd done back in the 1930s. I'm thinking about this bull market, when you really started looking at it, we started measuring it when it was confirmed and you broke out to all-time new highs.
Okay, so, all right, 2009, and you feel like we've got some room to go. Let me kind of throw out to you some of the concerns that we hear on the show. It's a talk show, so we get emails and people call in, and let me see if I can get your answer on some of those, because there's kind of been some concerns about the structure of this market and maybe the causal factors behind the market, one of which, obviously, the big one is the Fed. There are a lot of people out there, including myself, that have been concerned that this could be an artificial market that's really been Fed-created by the Fed money. And kind of support seemed to come from that the other day when it turns out that if you look back over the last couple of weeks, the biggest sell-off came when there was a misunderstanding of Janet Yellen's comments, even more so than what Vladimir Putin was doing. In other words, it seems like the Fed comments caused greater consternation in the market than really truly international events. Do you think the Fed is responsible for this bull market in some way or other?
I definitely think that the Fed has done an absolutely amazing job dealing with the liquidity crisis coming out of the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. And there's no question that with the policies they put in place, they have really provided a lot of liquidity and got this bull market started. But that's what they're there to do. They're meant to be a counterbalance to the overall business cycle. And yes, a lot of investors are nervous with the QE starting to unwind. But I want to make one observation, is that when you look at all the G7 countries' 10-year bond yields, and you make a composite of it, and then you compare that to the 10-year bond yields in the U.S., guess what? We're almost 100 basis points above those G7 countries. And with our rates higher than those G7 countries, investors from Europe, investors in those G7 countries are going to be buying U.S. bonds. They're going to continue to see that trend do the job for the Fed for a while longer in here. So with investors nervous that the Fed is taking back some of this kind of unprecedented bond buying and liquidity, I don't think they should be nervous about that. I don't think you're going to see the Fed raise rates anytime soon. And the reason I say that is because there is no incentive for them to make a policy mistake. They want this bull market to keep moving because it creates a wealth effect. And if people are going to do well in their investment portfolios, they're going to likely go out and spend, buy a new house, spend on a car, spend on furniture, you name it. They're going to keep this bull market going.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. By the way, folks, for those of you that are just joining us, we've got Craig Johnson with us today, from the Technical Research Group at Piper Jaffray. If you'd like to give us a call, the phone number is 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611. All right, so you've made a good argument that we should not be concerned about the Fed. What about corporate earnings? We haven't had a lot of top-line growth. Now, I realize you're a technical guy, and maybe you don't look at that so much, but there doesn't seem to be the quality of top-line growth that we've seen, that it looks like over the last several years in particular, that a lot of the profits that have been garnered by Wall Street have largely come at the expense of rising unemployment. In other words, they've been cutting staff. They've gotten fairly lean and mean. Admittedly, they're probably at a point now where they can't get any leaner or meaner, but there still seems to be a dearth of top-line growth, that we're not seeing the increase in sales that we would like to see, and there's some concern now about weakness internationally, which has been kind of a fallback position when we were weak, that we would sell things internationally. Even China this morning, some bad news has come out on China. What do you think about the sales position of most U.S. corporations?
So, looking at the top line, throwing my CFA hat on and setting aside the CMT hat here for a moment, I'd say this, is that top line growth has been a little bit weaker than some investors would like to see at this point in time. But I'd make the observation that from a bottom earnings perspective, that corporate earnings have been pretty good. We're in the process of exiting the Q2 earnings season, and looks like numbers have actually moved up a little bit. And when you think about it from a valuation perspective, in 2000, we were trading at 20 times forward numbers. 2007, we were trading at 17 times. When we broke out above 1550, we were trading at about 13.5, and if we roll out to the 2015 numbers, trading.
Can you hang on just a second? We've got to take a quick break. We'll pick up on that when we come back. So stay with us. Stay with us, folks. We've got with us today Craig Johnson, Managing Director, Piper Jaffray. We'll be back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today Craig Johnson. Craig is Managing Director and Senior Technical Research Analyst and directs Piper Jaffray's Technical Research Group. And by the way, for those of you planning on the Money Show in San Francisco, Craig will be speaking there at the Money Show in San Francisco. Okay, Craig, you're very bullish about the market. We covered a lot of things. One of the comments you and I talked about during the break, though, that was really interesting, there are just simply fewer stocks out there. for people to invest in. And I think this is having a big impact on the market.
I 100% agree. And as I look at the fact that we've got somewhere between 30 and 40% fewer stocks in the market today, what I don't think a lot of people realize is that as money starts to come out of fixed income, and when we do see the economy pick up and rates start to work their way higher, and we see money come out of fixed income and back into equities, there's just a fewer homes to put that money to work. So
right.
I think that's ultimately going to continue to push up the equities, I think, and that's going to be a real key underpinning in our thought process for this secular bull.
All right. Now, I guess, is there anything that really concerns you out there? Obviously, you're very bullish, and I've thrown at you, I'm getting too old. I don't know if I've thrown out every objection. If there's anybody out there that has an objection that I haven't thrown out, give us a call at 877-711-5611. But I think you know, the Fed-driven market, we got your name from Sam Stovall, and Sam brought us the Tina description. There is no other alternative, which doesn't seem positive, but it's a realistic, realistic situation with regard to the market. But is there anything that could unravel your optimistic output? Is there our outlook? Is there anything out there that really does concern you? Would it be China? Would it be what's going on in Russia? Is there something out there that could really derail all this?
Well, there's a couple things to think about. One, very difficult to try to predict any sort of geopolitical event. Very difficult to predict those. If there was to be, you know, a spreading of the conflict into Ukraine, into other regions, that certainly would be a very big negative for the overall market. I would also say that if the Fed is unsuccessful here in actually getting the economy to grow more quickly, to create some inflation, and we continue to see a deflationary pressures grow, that would certainly be negative to my scenario, because you wouldn't get that asset allocation shift from fixed income back into equities as quickly. So those are two things that I would point out that, you know, might keep you up a little bit at night. But at the end of the day, I continue to think that the rule of don't fight the Fed and certainly don't fight the EDB certainly applies here.
Oh, absolutely. The rule don't fight the Fed in my almost 40 years is true. Now, the other thing I guess I will throw out, and I guess this has just come from my experience, is that, as I mentioned to her during the break, I'm approaching 40 years in the business. It seems like when everybody is on one side of the ledger, then that's exactly what is not going to happen. And it's very hard to find a bear now. I mean, you pretty much have to really rummage out there, because it's very, very difficult to find a bear. I mean, we're going to have three guests on this week. You're kind of right in the middle here. And I think all three of you are going to be very bullish. We had John Thomas on yesterday. We've got Jack Ablin on tomorrow. And my guess is all three of you are going to be very bullish, which is pretty consistent with most of the guests that I have on here, which is nice. But sometimes that doesn't bode well for the market, because if everybody's on one side of the boat, it begins to list, and it doesn't work out that way.
Well, it's interesting is that I will tell you that, yes, we're bullish. Yes, we're hearing strategists and other investment professionals turning more positive toward this market. But I just don't get a real strong sense that the individual public has really come back and embraced this market yet.
Absolutely,
I'd be more nervous if I showed up at a cocktail party and everybody's asked me, hey, Craig, can I have four stocks I need to buy today? First off, I don't get invited to cocktail parties anymore, number one. and number two, nobody's asking me about stocks. Nobody.
All right, Craig. Well,
I'd be more nervous if that was the case.
Oh, well, I agree with you. And if we have a cocktail party, we're going to make sure you get invited. But but you're right. And in fact, there's a lot of commentary out there about how the vast majority of the investing public has missed this whole market. What would bring? What do you think would bring the public back in? You made a comment a couple of times this morning. I found interesting is that when the money starts coming out of bonds, and right now it's just kind of been clinging on to those low yields. Do you anticipate that happening anytime soon? What would trigger that?
The only thing that's going to trigger rates to really go up is going to be an acceleration in the economy. We had seen a pretty good Q2 GDP number, preliminary number, get printed. And if we continue to see in the second half 3 to 4% GDP posted, I think that's going to help push rates up. And if that's going to be the case and the economy's strengthening, then that's going to really start to get things moving.
Okay. All right, I'm going to switch gears here. You're a technical analyst. A lot of people get confused. A lot of investors get confused on where technical work fits in the analysis of a stock. How does a technical analyst, how does your department help Piper Jaffray, help the advisors and the firm arrive at decisions to buy or sell a stock? How does technical analysis fit into the whole scheme of things?
Right, so think about it this way. Think about the equation we all know, price over earnings, right? I will challenge anybody to show me a textbook that says that you have to start with E first to decide that a stock should be bought. I start with the top of the equation. I like to start on top, and I start with E, and I use price as a way to help me filter the market and figure out what stocks are working, what industry groups are working, and ultimately what sectors of the market are working. Once we've done that and we find things that are trending, making higher highs and higher lows, because at the end of the day, our goal is to find stocks that are going to go up and avoid those ones that look like they're about to break down. That's where technical analysis comes into play. And the beautiful part about technical analysis is it's subjective. Higher highs, higher lows, you're in an uptrend. That's a good thing. If you're making lower lows and lower highs, we can have whatever thoughts we want in terms of valuation. But at the end of the day, you don't mark a portfolio to a PE. You mark it to price. And so we're using technical analysis to identify those actionable, timely ideas and perhaps changes in sentiment to a degree. And we can see those very clearly in the charts at both a stock, sector, and industry level. And we take that work that we're doing and we act as a bird dog and point this out to our clients to help them see that, hey, something is changing here.
Okay. There's a really important question I want to ask, and I'm hoping we can get it in. If not, can you stay over for just a
– Yeah.
Can you stay – actually, I want to give you time to answer this question, so I'm just going to kind of wait and answer it on the other side of the break. And it's about technical analysis, and what it's about is that so many people are sold on these technical programs. I mean, when you go online – there's all kinds of things for sale there. I want to know whether or not you think the average person can effectively do technical analysis. So, folks, when you come back, that's the question I'm going to ask. So stay with us. We've got Craig Johnson with us. We'll be back in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, we're in the last segment. We've been very fortunate today to have Mr. Craig Johnson with us today. Craig is Managing Director and Senior Technical Research Analyst and directs Piper Jaffray's Technical Research Group. Craig has been kind enough to stay over for part of this third segment and be one of those reasons because we have a caller.
We've got
George from Galveston. Good morning, George.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I had a question. You guys have discussed about secular bull markets. And Craig had mentioned that we're in a secular bull market right now.
Right.
The thought that crossed my mind was the stock market is a reflection of what investors expect or where the investors expect the economy will be headed to. And right now I can understand that because of Fed support, investors are confident that the economy would improve, and therefore we see that reflection in the stock market, though there is a disparity between the numbers and how high the stock market is. So my question is, if the numbers don't keep adding up quarter after quarter, wouldn't that mean that we're actually not in a secular bull market, but it's just that investors are hopeful that things would improve, and the Fed intervention hasn't been as effective as they would like it. So that was the thought that crossed my mind. I wonder what you think about that line of thinking.
Okay, Craig.
Yeah. So let me address that. So The S&P 500 is actually included as part of the leading economic indicators. And so we're always looking at the market, trying to peer ahead 6 to 9 months. And I think the market has done a pretty good job of reflecting certainly the improvement in corporate earnings. I mean, if you look out and you take the numbers from S&P, Sam Stovall and stuff, you know, you're looking at, you know, over $130 in earnings for next year. At that point in time, the market is trading at about 14 times, and you're trading at about a 2 multiple discount to the average multiple post-World War II. So we are seeing things improving in the economy, and corporate profits have come up, albeit not as much at the top line yet, because two-thirds of our economy is driven by consumer consumption, and consumers still feel nervous and still are concerned about security, jobs, wage growth, all these things. We haven't seen those factors really pick up yet, but we are seeing profits picking up. That's underpinning this market. Nobody likes this market, but when you look at where we are today, we're still trading at least 6 multiples below where we were trading at in 2000, and everybody loved the market then, and we're trading cheaper than that today, and everybody hates it, and we're trading at higher numbers. So I understand in terms of the connection between the market and the economy, but think about it as a leading indicator. And I think people are anticipating good news. And with the Q2 GDP numbers that just came, that certainly was very positive for the overall market. And if those numbers carry through for the remainder part of this year, we put up 3 to 4% GDP growth, I think you're going to start to see some of that excess supply out there in the marketplace, whether it's labor or goods, start to get soaked up, and then you're going to start to see the economy really feel better for individuals.
Okay, George, did that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you for the response. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for listening, and thank you for the call. All right, Craig, one last question. You and I talked during the break, and I kind of led into it at the end of the last segment, is that one of my concerns is that there are a lot of things that are sold to the investment public, and one of these are these trading programs that seem to indicate to the public that they can sit down and in 5 minutes – make themselves a small fortune, and then, you know, they kind of go away. They go away and play for the rest of the day. You know, they kind of sit down in the morning, do their little 5 minutes trade, make a lot of money, and then go live the rest of their life. Whereas people like you and I work 40 to 50 hours a week and been doing it for decades. I haven't figured out a way to do it in 5 minutes yet. But what do you think about these systems, and what do you think about the use of, because so many of them seem to be technical analysis?
Well, I wish I only worked 50 hours a week. That would be absolutely phenomenal. I think our team works about 6 days a week, and I would tell you that we're probably 60 to 80 hours a week. I mean, it is backbreaking work to go through and look at all the charts in the market, domestic, foreign, and everything else. And what I would say for all these, you know, get-rich-quick type programs out there is I take the vantage point from myself. And as president of the Market Technicians Association globally, right, I would say that if it's that great of a trading methodology, why are you telling everybody about it? Why wouldn't you just keep that to yourself and go print all the money you want at that point in time with that particular trading approach? So I take a very much standoffish approach to those kind of tactics because I've done this for 20-plus years, and I know that you don't have get-rich-quick schemes really deliver the results that I think they're making.
Yep, I agree. I think it takes good hard work. A lot of people seem to think that the average investor is not a good investor, but I think if they become better educated, if they work with a competent professional, I think they've got a real good chance of making some money out there. Listen, Craig, we want to thank you so much. Thank you for staying over into this segment, and thank you so much for taking the time from that 60 to 80-hour week that you're putting in to spend a few moments with us today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.